Hello there, football fans, and welcome to Thursday's edition of the Soccer Central podcast. I am James Sharman, joined by John Molinaro, who watched, I think, every single Champions League game this past week. Is that
pretty
correct?
Close. Well, four or five, yeah.
Now, you watch, do you like pick like one live to watch and focus on that and then PVR the rest? Or how do you work it?
Well, watch one live and then I don't like watching games on PVR because I know the result, unless it's something really big that I, you know, I absolutely want to miss. So I usually have one game going on and I'll have a couple TVs on the side. So.
You got like more than one screen?
Yeah. Well, in the newsroom, right? There's
you're working, of course.
Yeah. There's more than one screen.
I was on my couch at home.
Yeah. If I'm on my couch, then it's just one game, obviously. Right.
Okay, well, listen, no, we'll get to Champions League talk soon in today's podcast. Also, we'll look at the weekend in the English Premier League. But let's talk some Italian Serie A, shall we? A subject very close to JMO's heart here. Paddy Agnew writes for the Irish Times, World Soccer Magazine, Yahoo Sport UK, one of the authorities on Italian football. Paddy, welcome to the show.
Good evening to you, or good morning to you.
It's just about just the afternoon. Yeah, just turn afternoon. It's a fascinating Serie A season. As much as it gets denigrated in many areas unfairly, it's a very fascinating season this year. We look at the table, we see Inter Milan in first place. It's been a while since they were there. Roberto Mancini's revolution, I guess, is working. But despite that, Paddy, not everyone's happy about it. Arrigo Sacchi, for example, has been quite critical of the way they're playing. Any reason behind that?
Well, Inter a bit strange to be out in front because it's a large extent unconfirmed team. It hasn't really got together yet, but they keep on winning 1-0, not playing very well, but scoring goals with they pick up the point. And that's why Sacchi doesn't like him, because he believes in a side that knows everything it does off by heart, and everybody knows the position and they know the moves and they don't get anything wrong. Inter are not at that point. You can't even point to what would be the Mancini's first choice 11 at the moment. There are obviously players like Filippi Melo in midfield and Jovetic up front and now Lajic, who are going to be in the team throughout the rest of the season. But it's not clear who the others are. However, one of the things that Marcello Lippi, the former Italy and Juventus coach, said the other day is that, OK, they're not playing particularly well, but they keep on winning. And as soon as they start to play well, you're all going to give... you all better look out, because they're not going to be easy to deal with.
I think, one of the better stories this early season too, Paddy, is the form of Fiorentina, especially under manager Paolo Sosa, and Kalinic, the Croatian, has been on fire since he's come into Serie A.
Yeah.
Just interested to hear your take on the Viola, and do you think they can make a legitimate run at the title here?
Well, I'd say, there are two very interesting things that happened this season, by the way. I'll talk about Fiorentina, but it's Fiorentina and Napoli. They're both very interesting so far.
Right.
As for Fiorentina, can they go all the way? I'm not really convinced they can, but what is true is that, Paulo Sousa, the former Juventus player, Portuguese international, Basel coach, who's taken over this year at Fiorentina, he inherited a very good squad from Vincenzo Montella, the previous coach, a squad that could play good football. And he's the sort of guy who, he was just the man to take over a squad like that, because they're playing arguably even better football now. But all the pieces were there, and he's playing with very much the same team that Montella had, with one big difference, and you've named, and that's Kalinic, who is, I'm not sure what happened to him in the English Premiership. I know that Zvonimir Boban, the former Milan Croatia international, he said that the English had ruined him and nearly finished him off as a player because they'd undermined his confidence so much. But if his confidence has been undermined in the past, he certainly regained it at the moment. And he scored, off the top of my head, you probably have it there, I can't remember how many goals he scored this season.
I think it's nine goals. It's nine goals, yeah.
And an awful lot of them have been first touch.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's been putting them away in the area, ball comes into center, one touch and it's in the net. He's done that, I think, about 7 of his 9 goals have been like that. So he looks like a very, very good player, and he looks like a player who you're going to see a lot more of next summer at the European Championships in France.
You mentioned Napoli there, and they've been a great story. Top two, they're playing Inter Milan actually on Monday, I believe. They've got 12 wins in the last 14 games, all competitions, with Mauricio Sarri, who replaced Rafa Benitez in the summer, getting it done. And this guy, it's his first really big job, isn't it? You know, with a big, big club. But so far, it's been great football to watch.
Well, again, Sarri, to a certain extent, looks to me a little bit like Sousa in that he inherited a very strong squad. I mean, you know, the best striker in Italian football, if not in Europe at the moment, is Higuain, and he was there already. You know, and he didn't have to make too many adjustments to his personnel. One thing he's done, and this applies, this is something that maybe the Roma officials and Roma fans should think about, is that he inherited a potentially very leaky defence. He's worked really hard in the defence, and Napoli's defence has now tightened up a great deal. So with a tighter defence, with absolutely, you know, boiling hot players like Insigne, Mertens, and Higuain, obviously, up front, this is a very, very useful looking Napoli. At this point, if you were to ask me who's going to win the championship this year, I'd say at this point Napoli. They're the side that have impressed me most. I say that because I have just a funny suspicion that this year the big three, the sides that have won the vast majority of titles, you know, Inter, AC Milan and Juventus, I don't think any of them are going to win it this year. And if it's not going to be them, well, then Napoli, I would see, as the side that will step in.
Interesting. You don't think Juventus can win it?
No, I think, you know, Juventus are the best team in Italy by a long way. And I think they proved it last night. You know, it was just a thoroughly professional performance last night in the Champions League. You know, and Man City, with all due respect, them never looked to me like they were going to beat Juventus last night. Indeed, Juventus probably should have won 2-0 rather than 1-0. But I just think at this point, Juventus, it's not that the fire's gone out of the belly, the hunger's gone, but I just think they're more interested in making up for this summer's Champions League final loss to Barcelona, because you know, I think they let themselves be a little bit overwhelmed by the Barcelona reputation before coming into that game. And, you know, had they played their as well as they can play, I think they could and should have beaten Barcelona in that final. Whether they beat the current Barcelona is another matter, but that Barcelona wasn't as good as Barcelona looked the other night against Real Madrid or indeed against Roma this week.
Max Allegri, you know, when he obviously first went to Juventus, he was under pressure, but I guess he proved doubters wrong and that they won the Serie A. This year, you know, as you mentioned, they're sitting sixth right now. They're 9 points back of first place. Yeah, they're doing well in Europe. But what is the mindset towards Max Allegri from that Juve fan base?
Well, I think it's very simple. If Morata, the team director, said it very clearly, you know, if we continue on in Europe, there's no problem. And, you know, if they get to the quarterfinals, semi-finals, final, Juventus will be more than happy, you know. And so far, he's delivering. I mean, they're already into the second round with a game to go. Usually, Juventus, and in recent years, Juventus have struggled. Sometimes they haven't even got into second round, but usually they've had to get down to the very last match to get into the second round. This year, they've wrapped up with a game to go, and they've looked comfortable throughout. You know, they opened up their Champions League campaign with an away win against Man City. You know, it's a perfect start. And therefore, I don't think Allegri's under any pressure at all. And I know the club can't say it, and they won't say it to the fans, but I don't think they're terribly fussed about winning Serie A. If they're on target in the Champions League, that's what they want to do.
Patty, I think one of the better stories this Serie A season is the one about Gianluigi Donnarumma. You know, the 16-year-old goalkeeper who became the youngest goalkeeper ever to start in Serie A. It's an interesting one because, and I'm sure you would agree with me, Italian teams, especially, you know, the top ones, they're very shy to start such young players. I mean, they're notable exceptions, but to give this kid a start at 16 years old, it's quite something. Do you see this as, I don't know, a change in philosophy overall, or is this a one-off? Do you think clubs might Italian clubs might be a little bit more willing to take chances on young players?
I would like to think they will, but I don't believe it. I think he's an exception that proves the rule, you know?
Right.
And I think it's also to do with two things. The position. The demands that goalkeeping requires is such a particular type of football. A goalkeeper has to play such a particular type of physical and mental requirements that he has, that it's not difficult for people who know a good footballer and know a good goalkeeper to recognise when they see one. And everybody who's worked with this lad thinks that he is the genuine article. And the impression I get from what I've seen of him, and I haven't seen him in the flesh, I've just seen him in a couple of games of TV, is that he is, he's physically, he's a very big lad. He's, I think he's about 6'4". He's very commanding in the area. He's very sure of himself. He's got that sort of lack of self-consciousness that comes with his age. So he is full of confidence, really. And the people who work on the goalkeeping coaches at AC Milan say that he's got absolutely everything. A guy like Mihailovic is under the Milan coach. He's under a deal of pressure because, Milan are they're seventh in the league at the moment. They're not by any means having a great season. So he wouldn't take a chance like that with a fundamental player like the goalkeeper unless he absolutely believes that this guy's the real thing. However, I don't think that means you're going to see a whole shower of 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, let alone 16-year-olds, turning up for Serie A teams in the next few months. The Italian football just doesn't work that way, and I don't see it changing.
And quickly, another player that I've been quite impressed this season, who I think is flying a little bit under the radar, is Riccardo Zampanara of Empoli. Just a wonderful attacking midfielder. Was on the books at a while for Milan, and I think he played one game there or a few. Do you see him?
Yeah.
I mean, do you see him making going on to bigger, better things after the season? And is he in considered by Conte for the national team?
He is considered by Conte for the national team. There's no doubt about that. He's considered at least a squad player. And somebody who knows a lot more about football than me, that's Marcello Lippi, said the other day that he it's only a matter of time before he breaks into a big club and into the national team. So I know I haven't seen him again. He's none of those players I've only seen in highlights. I haven't seen him play this year. But, everybody says he's a terrific player.
Paddy, we've got many listeners here who are fascinated with what happens to Michael Bradley and Seba Giovinco. Both are being linked. There are reports with potential loan moves to the Serie A. Firstly, do you hear anything about Michael Bradley? Of course, played with Chievo, played at Roma as well. Any thoughts or news regarding him?
Well, I haven't. Maybe there is something out there, but I've missed it. I haven't seen anything about him coming back. There've been mutterings, but I haven't seen anything called concrete.
Now, regarding Giovinco, obviously he made the last couple of squads for Conte's Italy. He's now in his off-season. Yeah. Do you think he needs to play over there over the winter to get back in the reckoning for Europe?
No, he doesn't. I think he's already in the reckoning for Europe. And if he if he doesn't have any injury problems, he's in the squad. I think he's a player who's rated by Conte. Conte requires specific things, but if a guy, one thing he really appreciates is that a guy is willing to put himself out to play for the national team, and Giovinco clearly is. And then from the technical viewpoint, Giovinco is such an unusual player, like the small stature, the mobility, the fantastic control, the pace. He's a very useful player to have on the bench to bring in the last quarter of an hour of a European championship game when you want to maybe try and change something around. So I think, unless something goes wrong with Giovinco on the physical side, he's in the squad.
I think he led Euro qualifying in crossbars and posts and played in two games. Something ridiculous. Paddy, thank you so much. Really enjoyed that. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers, Paddy.
That is Paddy Agnew. You can follow Paddy on Twitter at Paddy Agnew. Yeah, he knows a lot about Italian Serie A.
He sure does.
Say, and when he's a fan of Sebastian Giovinco, take it by his word.
Yeah.
He's a very good player indeed. Champions League, we got to it briefly there. Juve, your Juve, you watched that game closely.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw in the highlights and flipping around the channels, Paul Pogba took another step forward in his legend.
Yeah, he sure did.
Wow. He just destroyed that City midfield, didn't he?
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised with the ease with which he did it because he just seemed to glide by Man City players and really made them look foolish. I thought it was a wonderful performance by him. I was probably more taken by Sandro, the left back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Starting for Patrice Evra, Juventus's regular left fullback, who came on later as a sub. But I thought this was a breakout game for Sandro, and if anything, it may have cemented his place as the Larding's left fullback or left wing back. Fabulous. And it was his cross, of course, that led to Mandzukic's goal. But he had a great game, and I thought just was probably, along with Pogba, Juventus's best player. But thoroughly performed, and Paddy kind of mentioned it there, a thoroughly professional performance by Juve. Got the goal, then killed things down, never really gave Man City much of anything, and could have easily won 2 or 3-0.
It's funny, you mentioned Pogba and how he just glides past players, and he does just that. He doesn't look like he's moving fast,
no.
Does he? He's got those long legs, that long gait, and before you know it, he's got 2 or 3 yards on a defender or a midfielder.
Yeah.
There's that one run in the first half he did, and he just kind of walked from his top of his own box all the way to the other box. Literally walked there, it seemed.
Yeah.
And City had no answer to him. He was really very special. Let's hope he stays in Juve. And you know, those will come up again in January and the summertime about his future and who's going to pay. There may not be, outside of Neymar, there may not be a higher price player right now. Is that fair to say? I mean, considering Messi's almost 30.
That's
Ronaldo's, you know.
I see what you're saying. I mean, he's what, 22, 23?
Yeah.
22, I want to say. So
who's valued the highest right now, I wonder? Not who's the best player, who's valued highest? He's got to be up there. Neymar's probably number one.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Pogba just because of his age, right? And because it's just such a tremendous upside to there. And he could be, you know, the foundation of any club for the next decade.
It's not Gareth Bale anymore. Although he's still worth a lot of money.
Yeah, still worth a lot.
Real Madrid beat Shakhtar Donetsk 4-3.
I wish
Ronaldo
I watched that
two
one.
Games. I know, that was a good game, eh? Holy smokes.
Was it 4-0 and then they... Wow.
Yeah, they switched off.
Wow.
Just completely switched off. Ronaldo and Bale having an intimate embrace on the turf.
Oh,
made the rounds on Twitter.
Sweet.
Isn't it nice? Ronaldo with 2 goals there. I was stuck watching the United game against... who the hell did they play again?
PSV,
yeah. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, it didn't sound too
entertaining. Some bad games this season. A lot of bad games, but that was maybe the worst.
How did Rooney play?
Awful.
Yeah.
Like, just not... I wouldn't say he's invisible because he gets plenty of the ball. He passes the ball plenty. He's never horrible. He's not giving the ball away. But where are the penetrating passes? Where are those runs? What's he doing that's going to help his team win? That's my question. You know, it's as if you could put a very average player for a quarter of the price in that same position and do exactly the same job.
Right.
That's the issue with Rooney right now. He's not awful, but he's not doing what Wayne Rooney has done for much of his career. He's just a passenger out there.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, and we kind of mentioned this before, we talked about it before we went to air, it kind of reminds me the way he's kind of gone off the boil of how Fernando Torres went off the boil when he went from Liverpool to Chelsea. His career seemed to go down, and he was a shell of his former player. I kind of see that the same with Rooney. I'm not sure what you attribute that to.
It's like they hit a certain age and the switches hit. And
yeah.
No longer, maybe it's that little bit of pace goes.
Yeah, maybe.
Add in the confidence, maybe niggling injuries. But you're right, that there's something there because both world-class players 1 year and then the next year, frankly, if not for their names, they're not starting for their teams.
Oh, absolutely.
And Rooney's only starting for United and England because of his name. Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Right? That's the only reason.
Yeah. And again, we talked about this before we came on the air, but you raised the point, like, if he goes on like this, does Roy Hodgson start him at Euro next year?
Yeah.
Hard. I mean, if Vardy keeps scoring the way he does.
That's the point, right? That is the point. Look at who's there's some pretty good young strikers right now for England. Vardy stands out. Harry Kane has been fantastic as well. And then, okay, so he's not playing up top, so he's playing in the number 10 role. Well, you know, Ross Barkley's been very, very good in midfield. You got other midfielders. I mean, Rooney played midfield late in the game yesterday. Dele Alli, you know, Eric Dier, midfielders, players
Sterling.
Who are Sterling, yeah, precisely. Guys that are young with their careers ahead of them and are playing not just a little better, but much better than Wayne Rooney right now.
And I think they're much more dynamic than Rooney right now. I mean, you know, Sterling is just, you know, off the charts. I think he's such a dynamic attacking player. Much more dangerous than Rooney. So,
if this continues as it is, Vardy's scoring goals for fun, Kane is, Rooney's still invisible. I can't imagine how he starts at Euro. I just can't.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, it'll be a very big controversy and a great talking point leading up to Euro, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he has not been very good. PSG beat Malmo 5-0. Ibra scores, and the festival of Ibra he organized in the town
square. Yeah, wasn't that great? People should know. I mean, Malmo was his, it's not only is the club where he started, but it's his hometown.
He loves
club.
That town.
Yeah, so he organized like a viewing party in the town square so everyone could watch.
All these Malmo fans. Do you know if they cheered when he scored?
I'm sure they did.
Probably.
I'm sure they did. He's such
really
an icon.
He really is a legend,
there.
Isn't he? Yeah. He's an icon, yeah. Yeah, he read his book and he just talks so fondly about his days in Malmo, learning, playing street football, essentially, right?
Yeah, I read a great story about, because when he first started, he had to like, the training ground was far from his home, so he had to walk, and eventually he got tired of that. So to get to training on time, he started stealing bicycles.
Ah, good old Ibra.
That's Ibra.
There's a story, nice story too, about him and his girlfriend when he's much younger in Malmo, sitting in the meadow, looking into town and seeing this beautiful pink house and saying, wow, imagine one day that could be ours. Just imagine. That's our dream. That house could be ours and we could make babies and live a wonderful life. And there it was. 15 years later, they owned it.
Hmm.
What a nice story, isn't it? Nice. Romance isn't dead in the Ibra household, that's for sure. Bayern Munich beat Olympiacos 4-0. Thomas Müller with his 50th Champions League win. He's 26 years of age. He beats Raul for the youngest player to win 50 Champions League games.
Wow.
Man, I love Thomas Müller.
I love him too.
Yesterday. I'm reading right now. You've read it. Rafa Honigstein's
Das Reboot.
Yep. Great little part on Thomas Müller. And what is he as a footballer? Because he's contrary to everything you expect a footballer is.
Yeah.
The way he looks, the way he moves.
Yeah.
But he does everything really well, like everything really well, if not great. And that makes for a great footballer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm a big fan of it. His love, his socks down by his ankles, his shirt untucked.
Yeah.
He's a player after my own heart.
Still think he goes down a little bit too easily sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Respect him.
Yeah. No, but a very interesting character, that's for sure. All right, looking ahead, J-Mo, to the weekend in the Premier League, we have a top-of-the-table clash. It's a marquee matchup.
I know.
If I told you back in August that we'd be touting this match as such, you'd call me a fat liar and an idiot. You do that anyway.
Yes.
But Leicester take on Manchester United. The late one on Sportsnet on Saturday. Leicester in first place. It's for first place. United, who are awful and their best players terrible and they can't score goals, could be in first place by the end of Saturday. Or Leicester could have expanded their lead. It's an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
And one bell that rings loudly is their schedule. And
coming
until
up.
Yeah. And prior to now, they've played Arsenal. They lost 5-2. They've played Spurs and drew. Apart from that, they played none of the contenders.
Right.
No really good teams. Not one. Coming up, they have United, then Swansea. But then you got Liverpool, Everton, Man City, Chelsea, all before 2016. Man, we're going to find out what this team is, aren't we?
Yeah, we sure are. It'll be interesting to see because I think a lot of people still doubt their whether they can sort of sustain this and you know how credible of a title threat they are. So I think if they come through this patch, in really decent form, then I think you really have to kind of give it to them and consider them a title threat. I think it's been great. I mean,
whoa! Did you say title threat there?
Well, possibly.
Whoa,
yeah.
Whoa,
sure.
Whoa.
If they come through this patch still in first, you don't think so?
No, it makes absolute sense what you're saying from a standing standpoint, from a math standpoint. Absolutely. Leicester, I'm not going to win the Premier League this year.
No, I didn't say that, but I think you have
you
to
just
consider
said that if they come through this,
they'd be a title threat. No? You don't think they could like
not
contend?
Yet. Wow. Yeah, just because, you know, we've seen teams, smaller teams do well up until the new year before. We've seen Southampton do it. We've seen Sunderland 1 year. Ipswich did it as well.
But this
not
is,
this well.
But that's the point. I mean, since April, whatever it is, second, I mean, they've won, I think, 22 of 25 games or something like that. You know, collected more points than any team in the Premier League. This is pretty amazing form they're on. This is championship form. Best team in England.
This year it is for sure. I mean, 28 points after 13 games isn't great compared to previous years.
No.
But that's not their fault. I mean, no one else has got 28 points.
No, exactly.
I do wonder if they'll be found out. I mean, they do play a certain way.
They sure do. Yeah, absolutely.
And can they adapt? Because good teams are going to figure that out, you think, and good tactical managers, which Ranieri is.
Right.
You know, when they start playing these big boys, are they going to be found out a little bit? And you know, are they a bit too predictable?
Well, and that's why I say this sort of stretch that they're through for the next month is going to be critical. And
how many points do you want for them? I'll go through the exact schedule with you, okay? And you can do some math here, okay? Bear with me here. Leicester. Yeah. Leicester. There they are. Scores and fixtures. All right, here we go. All right, so next up, United, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they have Swansea.
Mm-hmm.
That's away from home. Then they host Chelsea. They are then away to Everton. Away to Liverpool. Stay in town that week, eh?
Yeah.
Then they host Man City. And that's it for 2015.
So that's 18 points.
Yes, that's correct. Up for grabs.
I would say if they could take 12 or 13.
Really?
Yeah.
And from whom will they take those? Let's say they would beat Swansea.
Well, figure Swansea, let's say Everton. So that's okay. Six.
They're two away games.
Okay. Then, you know, if they can get beat one of Man United or Liverpool or Man City or Chelsea, then that's nine. And then I don't know. Maybe draw Liverpool and draw Man City.
I'm gonna guess they're gonna get 5 points between okay. now and Christmas. And the new year. Which will
I'm not predicting 12, by the way. Out. I'm just saying, you know, if they get 12, right. Then I think that's a massive achievement.
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, predicting-wise, I don't know. I think I'm going to give them a little bit more credit. I'll say they'll grab 8.
I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong. I really do, because I think they're a wonderful story.
They're fun to watch,
too. They're fun to watch, right? So often you see these lesser teams doing well through stoic defense and just putting 10 men behind the ball and being organized in great shape. All those boring things about football.
Right.
Rarely do they do it scoring goals. This team concedes them as well. 20 against, right? 28-4.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're going to find out what they are, and it's going to be a five-point team.
Could be.
Now in 2016, and that will see them back, probably top four still.
Yeah.
But very much sinking to those. And quite if you tell Leicester fans back in August that you'll finish top half, which I think they probably are.
Oh, they'd rip your hand off.
Rip your hand off.
I'll take that in a minute.
Very happy. Otherwise, elsewhere this weekend, we've got Palace against Newcastle on Sportsnet. The Alan Pardew derby.
Oh, right. Where is it? Is it
that
in Newcastle?
Palace, I think. Is that Palace? Okay. I think, yeah. Wow. It's a shame.
Yeah, I'd be interesting to see what kind of reception you get back at Newcastle.
Man City, Southampton.
That'll be a good one.
Three games on the hop losses.
Wow.
Compared to fixtures.
Is that our game, Man City, Southampton?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
Yep, Saturday morning.
Cool.
It's our first one. This one's not ours, so don't watch it, but Spurs-Chelsea. Harry Kane, rumours to Chelsea have started already, by the way, this week. Obviously, some bored
journalists.
Really?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I'm sure some Chelsea staffer has dropped his name in there just to kind of unsettle him, maybe.
Hmm.
Must be.
Kane to Chelsea. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, if they can do it, it'll be next summer, you think. But as they found out this past year with John Stones, it isn't that easy anymore to just go out and muscle your way into players.
Now, did you watch Chelsea-Tel Aviv?
I watched bits of it.
So apparently John Terry picked up an injury.
Yeah, on the turf, on the field.
How serious is it?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know. I haven't seen Jose's presser yet today.
Right.
I'm assuming he's had it already. But I know he was blaming the turf.
Do they play on an artificial surface?
No, well, the grass.
Oh, just the grass.
Terrible.
It was the grass. Okay, gotcha.
Really bad.
Gotcha.
We just have a look here. Keep talking about something.
Well, that could be... I love the... talking about Mourinho. I love the quote... I think it was after the weekend where... Who did they beat last weekend?
Last weekend, they beat...
I can't remember. But anyways, someone was asked...
5 days ago.
Yeah, I know. We're getting old. Someone, like the reporter asked him post-game, you know, about the title race and are they still in? He's like, you know, if you ask me about top four, that's doable. If you ask me about winning the title, that's a mission impossible. You know, maybe Tom Cruise can help us out, but or something like that. It was like pretty funny.
Oh, it's jovial, Jose.
Yeah, it was a good.
That's nice. It's not bitter, cantankerous Jose. Yeah, he's got a couple of results. And
exactly.
He's
so it was kind of like a nice side to Jose for a change.
Jose says that Terry is doubtful for this weekend. Mm. Doubtful. So okay. Doesn't seem too serious.
Interesting.
Not that it's the worst thing in the world for him to not play. Although, in fairness, he played pretty well last weekend against whoever they beat. I can't think of it.
I can't think of it.
5 days ago.
Was it Norwich?
Who?
Norwich?
Norwich. He said Norwich.
Oh.
No.
I think it's Norwich.
It could be right. I don't know.
Bah.
Whatever.
I'm pretty sure it was Norwich.
Our brains are just... There's too many games, man. People laugh, but it's true. We have to cover a lot of games.
I watch like so many games. Like I watched El Clasico last week, and I watched a couple Serie A games. I watched the Liga game.
Got to watch Quara back against Spurs in a few minutes.
Yeah, I'll take a pass on that one. But yeah.
You're not a big fan of the Europa League?
No, I am. I wouldn't watch that one. I'd watch Basel Fiorentina's.
That'd be a good game, yeah. Yeah. All right, J-Mo, we're out of time. As usual, Bayern Munich is, I'm assuming, on the network this weekend.
Yeah, they're always on the network.
A lot of Bundesliga starting on Friday. Check out sportsnet.ca for the schedule, including, of course, our Premier League schedule. Well, what else is coming up on the site?
I've got a feature going up on Gianluigi Buffon later today because he celebrated his 20th anniversary of his Serie A debut.
Right.
He's now second all-time in Juventus appearances, which is pretty amazing when you think about the history of that club.
I've asked you this question before, and it's a tough one because there are... You know, so many great Italian goalkeepers, but is he the best ever?
He's up there. I think he's, I would rank him, either him or Dino Zoff, as the greatest of all time. And it's a hard comparison to make because Zoff played in a different era. Buffon plays now where I think it's much more difficult to be a goalkeeper because in Zoff's era, you had the back pass, right? Where he could pick it up. Goalkeepers have to be, you know, essentially more like sweepers and have to be able to play with the ball with their feet. Zoff did things, I think, better than Buffon. He was certainly more commanding in his area than Buffon. But for me, they're one and two in terms of, you know, the best Italian goalkeeper of all time.
I love it when you see really old pictures of football teams. Like, I'm talking like, you know, 1800s, 1900s, and the goalkeeper's always a big fat guy.
Yeah.
Always. They thought, well, the bigger, the more square footage he covers,
right,
physically, the better he is, right?
Right.
Times change.
Yeah, certainly
do. Now they're scrawny, tall little buggers. All right, we're out of time. Don't forget to follow JMO on Twitter at John Molinaro and myself at James Sharman. Our thanks to Paddy Agnew. We're back on Monday with Dobby Dunlop and yours truly to wrap the Premier League weekend. Cheers for listening.